Today's Bureau Briefing is brought to you by MailChimp. More than 16 million people, businesses, and agencies around the world use MailChimp's marketing automation platform to reach their customers and grow their businesses. Their features and integrations give agencies the power to help their clients succeed through marketing emails, automated messages, and targeted ad campaigns. Their detailed reports help clients keep improving over time and provide agencies with the insight they need to effectively advise their clients and inform their marketing strategies. MailChimp loves empowering agencies and small businesses alike, so that's what they focus on every day. And we thank them so much for making the Bureau Briefing possible.
Welcome to the Bureau Briefing, a podcast by the Bureau of Digital, an organization devoted to giving digital professionals the support system they never had. Each episode, we're going to talk to a member of our community doing awesome, inspiring things. Now for your host, Carl Smith.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. It's Carl, and with me today, I have the author of Mastering Account Management, also the author of the B2B Sales Blueprint, and the founder of Sales Schema, Mr. Dan Englander. How's it going, Dan?
I'm well, Carl. How are you?
Doing well. Now, we bumped into each other, I believe, on LinkedIn.
Correct.
Is that how we met?
Yes, yes. You probably got into one of our cockamamie funnels, and I got into No, I'm just kidding. I've listened for quite a while and reached out.
You trapped me. Trapped me in a net.
Exactly, yeah.
And you said the only way out.
Right.
I've got to be on
Give me your social security number. It's the only way.
Well, I would have given you that, actually. That's everywhere. But the Bureau Briefing is the hottest podcast, at least in the 32257 zip code.
Absolutely. If not into the next neighboring county.
It could be. It could be. Well, I'm glad you're on the show today. And, you know, the thing that struck me, and we had one conversation. So a lot of the stuff that you do is the kind of stuff that it almost feels like repellent sometimes to people running digital agencies. And, you know, we had Joe Rinaldi on the show and we talked about biz dev, and Joe's an old timer like me. I think you might be a little bit younger blood. I'm not sure.
But not too much.
But we got into it. And so when you and I started talking, I was like, you know what? We need to be open to a lot of different ideas. And I was hoping maybe you could start off, just give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I moved to New York in 2010 and then had a series of internships and eventually landed a job at a boutique agency here in New York. And when I was there, I was kind of doing, you know, all the grunt work and all the proposals. And that's not all of it, but a great deal of it. And we were doing social media work for Fortune 500s and that sort of thing. So I was sort of, you know, on the proposal end, and most of the leads were from referrals and personal networks from the company. And I had very little to do in terms of bringing home the bacon. I was just sort of like doing various grunt work. And then from there, landed a gig as the first employee at this creative services / animation shop, also here in New York. And that's when, you know, I became a glorified order taker. I was tasked with business development and I was basically a sales guy and didn't know I was. And I was also wearing, you know, a million other hats. I was doing all sorts of things that needed to be done in a small, you know, what started as a two-person company with a founder and me. And we were selling enterprise video to the Fortune 500 market as well as big agencies. And basically, like, what would happen is we would get a lead through inbound. You know, we would often get referred, or we were doing lots of PPC at the time. And then I'd create a proposal and then I'd shoot it off to the lead. And then I wouldn't do anything else and I wouldn't follow up. And all of a sudden, you know, it would just be crickets for months. So finally, my boss at the time, he's a close friend of mine still, was like, hey, do you want some sales training? You actually want to figure out how to do this? And I was like, Yeah, I guess I am a sales guy. Maybe I should do that. So went through training with, you know, a great kind of traditional sales guy trainer named Mike Ganzel here in New York, and learned the trade. And, like, you know, and I got really lucky because I was able to practice on what must have been into the thousands in terms of the numbers of calls I was on, because we were just running so many ads and getting so many leads. So that's really where I learned how to do what I do. And then eventually, you know, wanted to strike out on my own, and I started Sales Schema as a consultancy. And naturally, most of my clients were agency owners, because that was the space that I had background in. And that was the sort of those are the sort of people that I would, you know, get in touch with. And then I would give people different ideas. I would say, hey, you could try this, you could try that, you could try email, you could go out there and do this. And, you know, here's all these new lead generation strategies. And then what would happen is over and over again, you know, they would get busy with stuff, client work would come out up, fires would come up. And then eventually it would just, everything would go on the back burner, and this would happen over and over again. So eventually we thought, you know, why not solve the most time consuming, consistency reliant part of the sales process, which is getting that first hand raise from a busy marketing leader. So that's kind of what we do now is, you know, we generate qualified leads for agencies, and we have different programs for doing that. But you know, outbound is a big part of that, and we have inbound programs as well, and so on. So that's kind of my life in a nutshell, canceling out high school and all that stuff that I won't get into.
And I have to say, it was great having you on the show today.
Yeah, thank you.
No, so these are exactly the things that I think cause worry with digital agency owners, right? And we talked about this a little bit, but, you know, when you start saying, you know, outbound, inbound, PPC, none of us want to be salespeople.
Right.
I don't think. Now, I think there's a new wave of shops coming in, and they are a little more sales-oriented. The only thing that I think traditional digital agency owners want less than being a salesperson is being out of business. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes this thing where we realize that the great work that we do is going to get us great work, but there's a lull in between. There's all this other stuff, and there are these ways to find new people. So when you start talking about being able to help us and now specifically by helping us find those ideal clients by you know, outbound, and it's not a dirty word and it's so funny, right? But it's like for so many of us, that's kind of how it's felt. So I'm just curious, how do you determine or how do you work with us to find out who that ideal client is? Because I'll say, I think that's the biggest knock when somebody brings a salesperson in-house is that they never knew what it was we were trying to find.
Right, right. So to kind of answer that question in a roundabout way, I think you have to first talk about, you know, the clients that you're getting already. If you're not doing outbound, you're not doing these sort of strategies, which are people that are being referred to you, you know, through your network or through seeing your work once they have a need. So at that point, they're kind of in Goldilocks mode. They're trying to find somebody that's not too hot, not too cold, just right. And they're putting you into a spreadsheet, and you know, they might not know everything about what you want to do, about what they want to do. They might have to learn a little bit, but they're generally very problem and solution aware. So when you're doing outbound and you want to find the right client, you know, you're reaching people at a different stage, unless you get lucky and they happen to have a need when you hit them, which is rare, but that can happen. But generally you're hitting them when they're at this problem, you know, problem awareness stage. They know they have a problem and they know somebody can solve it. So, but they don't exactly know how. So in order to answer your question, in order to identify that right client, you know, you really have to be selling against their pain. You can't just say, we do great work, we're going to make you 10x better, because that's not really compelling enough for them to pay the cost of actually changing. So in order to identify that client, it's somebody who you know, fears loss or fears deterioration. So that means figuring out, you know, one or two verticals that you can make that argument for. Now, it's easier, you know, with some, I'm going to put it out there and admit the obvious that certain services it's much easier to do that for, like our service, you know, we help you get more business. Okay, that's, you know, I'm basically a sunshine and rainbows as a problem to solve. I'll admit that. It's harder for a design and development shop. But I think it's definitely possible. You know, if you can say, you guys are going to be investing this much anyway in the next year in design and development. If you did it with us and we have a specialty with travel and tourism, you're going to also get X, Y, and Z, and you're going to save all this money, and you're going to be this much further ahead, and you're going to avoid X problem, then that's a lot more compelling than just kind of putting your work in front of people and hoping for the best. So,
right. So explain the process. If you were to say that I was still running my shop and I decided that I wanted to bring Sales Skim on, like, how would you approach me about it? Like, what would I need to share with you? Just how would you help me?
Right, right. So, I mean, first we want to hear about, you know, where you've had success in the past and what's worked and what hasn't worked. And we want to hear how you've traditionally gone about winning new business, which, you know, for our market is 9 times out of 10 referrals and your personal network.
That's it, yeah.
And, you know, we have to sort of get beyond the point of knowing that you know, you're ready to have a sales process and to do all the things that you need to do to be a good salesperson. And the problem that we're solving isn't replacing your sales process, isn't selling for you. There are companies that do that. They're generally very high commitment and, you know, they require lots of learning. And it's basically like hiring a salesperson yourself. And we were, you know, for some context, we were at the crossroads of going that way and decided not to, because it's just a completely different business model. So, you know, we're a lead generation company and there's that's the problem we're looking to solve. So first off is making sure that you can actually, you're actually ready to do this and you're ready to take it on. And that means, you know, being persistent, working a pipeline, being able to do what, you know, everybody else in the enterprise world has to do as a salesperson. And for some reason, and this is, I love agencies. So I'm not disparaging anyone, but but for some reason, the agencies have just always functioned according to different rules until relatively recently. You know, so that's the first thing. And then, you know, to answer your question in terms of how we would identify the right clients for you, it's basically figuring out, like I said earlier, you know, what central problem you're able to solve. And it's always there, but it just requires peeling back lots of onion layers and basically figuring out, you know, how to make one compelling line that makes somebody agree to speak to you. And it's really a destructive exercise in that way.
So then we go through that. We find out that I was right all along and it's video game companies. That's absolutely, you know, we did great work for Epic. We, you know, we weren't able to ever maybe showcase it correctly, or we couldn't find a way to get into the decision makers, you know, front tier. So once you know that, like, what do you come back to me with?
Right, right. So, you know, what we find, and this can be applicable if they've actually tried outbound campaigns before, but not always, is that, you know, people will say, we've gone after XYZ group in different ways and it didn't work for us in the past, or, you know, this is a new group for us. And what we often find is that, A, you know, agencies will stop before they know what's going on. So it turns out nobody's read the emails that you've sent, or, you know, or there's due to some technical issue, or you just don't have enough data yet. You know, so maybe you sent your portfolio to 50 companies and nobody got back to you. And that's really just not enough data to say anything. So, you know, so from there, the first thing we want to make sure of is that is what your actual experience was like and why it might have played out like that. And then from there, it's really about targeting the right people. So to use your example of video game companies, and you say that, you know, you're awesome with that. Maybe you've gone after certain titles before, maybe not. What we find is that once you're going up to larger companies, there's very little title consistency. It can really run the gamut. You might have a bunch of people in a company doing different things, and it's going to be like, you know, I'm specialist customer engagement man, superhero, you know, XYZ title.
We all have our clever names.
Yeah, and it becomes tougher to identify. So that's the second thing, is once you know that, you know, you have data on something, and this applies, I'm using it in the context of email, but it could easily apply to an ad campaign or a speaking engagement or anything else. I think it's kind of perennial in that way. Then it's basically figuring out the people that you're going after and getting it specific to a vertical and specific to an ideal set of titles. And then from there, it's the message. And a lot of times people will flip it first. So they'll start with, you know, how do I send them as much cool stuff that's visually amazing, and then forget about the first two steps, which is basically, how do I get enough data? What outcome am I looking for? And who's this going to? Who's the audience?
So when you put together a plan, you include things like speaking engagements, if that's something that they've got in the arsenal at the shop?
We could, yeah. We have in the past. So that can be something that you do later on. You know, usually what we're going for is an agreement to a conversation, which, you know, is not too much to ask if you can show enough specialization. If you can say, you know, we focus on video game shops, look at all this great work we've done, can we find 15 minutes next week? That's compelling enough to get a good rate of return. But sometimes as a fallback, we'll talk about speaking engagements, we'll talk about events. You know, if somebody hasn't responded after a month or so, then we'll go with something that's a little softer.
So I think part of what gets a lot of shop owners is that we get in on these drip campaigns that are targeted at us, right? And we know that the person that just reached out and said, can I have 5 to 10 minutes of your time, probably said that to 1,000 people. And then we delete it or we go away. It's funny because my company Engine has been out of business pretty much for 2 years, and yet I keep getting put up for Business of the Year awards. And it's just intriguing. But I guess what I'm going at is, I think that's part of what we aren't comfortable with is jumping in there. So how do we make it, I hate to use a buzzword because it shouldn't be a buzzword, but how do we make it authentic?
Sure.
When we're doing
so it? First I want to, I'll answer that question, but first I'll just say that, you know, for one, the bar is low. Most of the emails that you're getting are not well targeted. You're getting exposed to people that aren't doing it right a lot of the time. Right. Secondly, I think that you can, and this is a problem that all salespeople have, is using yourself too much as that barometer, as opposed to what your clients are thinking. And the fact is, if you could think the way that your clients do, you wouldn't have any problem. You would know exactly where to go to reach them. You would do everything right, but you can't, you know, you really can't. You can get inside their head to some extent, but you can't, you know, all the objections and all the head trash and anxiety you have, they don't necessarily have. So you can't let what you would do trip you up in the face of people that could buy from you. It's better to get a no and then take that as data than to have never made the ask, I'd say. And the third thing is you're going for a certain rate of return, and that applies to any marketing channel, advertising, you know, the number of meetings you're able to get out of a speaking engagement, the number of whatever channel you're looking at, you're going to get a certain rate of return. And email can be quite high. We've had campaigns get, you know, 10% lead rates, where if you hit up 100 people, 10 of them agree to speak, which is great. But even with a crazy high lead rate, you're still going to get a lot of people that don't, you know, that don't want to talk to you right now. And I think that a lot of the times when you hear that, you assume that the people that have unsubscribed or haven't gotten back to you hate your guts and think that you're, you know, an Albanian spammer working out of Al-Qaeda compound somewhere. But that's not the case. Oh, what happens is they say unsubscribe or they don't get back to you, and they promptly forget about you because they've got a million things to do and so on. And then guess what happens a month later when somehow you get back on their radar through whatever channel is they say, oh, yeah, I think I remember that agency. And they don't remember that they said unsubscribe. You know, it's just another sign of familiarity and trust at the end of the day, unless you say something truly offensive or you know, you do it really wrong, but that's easy to avoid. With that, I've forgotten your original question.
I have too, yeah. But I have to say the very first outreach that Engine did, my shop in 2000.
Authentic. Okay. Sorry. Keep going and I'll get back to it. How do you make it authentic?
Yeah. But so Engine 2003, we sent out probably 3,000 postcards that had a photo of one of my partners. You could see him, his back, and he was at a urinal. And then written on the wall, it said, "We give good web" with our phone number. And we spent a lot of money and sent those out. And we got a lot of calls, mainly saying, "Never do that again." And landed two clients that were not worth it. It was the worst. It was the worst idea that we loved ever.
I love it too. I'm glad you did it. So now nobody else has to do it. But
well, and that's the thing, right? You're not gonna land Harvard sending them some photo of you at a urinal.
Right, right. I mean, I think that kind of has the answer buried, is that, you know, you want to be authentic, but you also have to be speaking to the audience that you're going after. And I applaud you for what you did, but I guess it didn't speak to whoever you're going after well enough. But you know, I'm not going to be able to give everyone a one size fits all approach, you know, because obviously it's going to depend on your situation. But what we've seen work is that the data is kind of leaning towards pithy. You know, overall, people tend to trust you more when you can use less words, and you can appear more as somebody that they might have met at a cocktail party as opposed to someone pitching them on something. And that involves really getting everything boiled down to a single one-liner that kind of gets across the problem that you're solving, you know. And then make it easy for them, make the call to action, you know, can we chat at a particular time? And that really, the little things like that really do make a difference.
Now, do you find referral programs effective? Is that anything that you ever get into, or is that just too much work for the return?
It's hard to say. You know, I think referral programs make a lot of sense when you actually do have a strategic partner that sells a service that's related to what you sell for a particular industry that you specialize in. Because then it becomes, you know, kind of a quid pro quo, even if it's not literally like that, even if you're not literally passing business back and forth, even if it's a one-way street, they get that resource. Where I've seen it not work is when agencies, because I've had agencies pitch us on it all the time, and it's sort of just like, you know, hey, we'll give you a kickback if you see business like this and so on. Oh. And it's like, you know, there's just not enough volume for any given agency to randomly come across your ideal buyer and then pitch you. And then even if they do, there's just so much trust that has to be built, you know, first. So I'd much rather send the business to somebody that I really trust as opposed to get like a, you know, $1,000 kickback or something.
And it's always so weird, the referral, especially if it's formalized, because then two shops that were formerly friendly now have this weird kind of relationship. And I think the biggest thing for me is any time at Engine that we tried to hand somebody off to somebody, the client didn't want it.
Right.
They selected one group and then they're getting sent to another group. So I'm glad you said that, because that's, I always thought maybe there was some way to crack the code on it, but I think it just sounds like a good idea, because we all realize we're sending away $250,000, $300,000 of work a year. And we feel like we should be able to capitalize on that some way, but maybe we should just be better at having resources to do that work.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the situation. So it's hard to, you know, give an answer for everything, but
yeah,
I think that there is a lot of value in clients not feeling like they're, you know, adopted children being bounced around between houses or something. So,
So how do you help? So you're gonna turn on this lead generation machine, and it, like, how long does it take, would you say, on average for a shop? And you deal with more, I mean, you're dealing with the creative industry overall, not just with digital agencies, but with digital agencies, how long do you think it takes to start seeing some of the impact of the work?
Yeah, good question. And obviously it can vary. But I think what's cool about outbound is it doesn't work overnight, but it moves a lot faster than if you were to do like a content campaign for yourself, or you were to, you know, spend a bunch of money on PPC or something. So we've had campaigns where we'll get leads within the first 2 weeks or so. A lot of the times though, you know, it takes some experimentation. It takes sending it to a certain group and having that not work and having to go back to the drawing board and so on. So there is learning involved, and you know, there's, these cadences are playing out for anywhere from like 7 to 30 days, just depending on what we're doing. So I think that's what's cool about outbound, is that it's more likely to keep your pipeline full, and it's a little bit less experimental than if you're doing other sort of inbound tweaking. Like if you're doing, like I said, like content and all sorts of other things, that can take a long time to know what the second or third order effects are. But with outbound, those effects happen a lot quicker.
That makes good sense. I guess I'm trying to think. So like what kind of inflow would you see 3 months in terms of the number of leads? Now, obviously this depends on the type of shop and the type of work, but a percentage increase or something like that. Like what would you tell people to expect?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the size of the companies that you're going after. If you're going after big enterprise, it's going to be a lot lower than if you're going after like SMBs or something, you know, cause there's people are just in for a number of reasons, but I'd say, you know, for the most of our clients, we're going after 5 to 10 leads per month. And I think that, you know, it's really good for agencies to be on the same page about KPIs and what defines a lead and so on. So the way that we define a lead is it's somebody that fits the right criteria. You know, it's somebody that's the right titles or the right set of titles at the right industry, at the right size company, so they could afford you. And, you know, they've raised their hand and shown genuine interest. And what does that mean? It basically means that they've agreed to speak to you in the short term. You know, they ask that you follow up at a more relevant time in the medium term, or they, you know, they want to talk to you, but they might have a reservation or two. Like, send me more information. Do you have a case study I can look at first, et cetera?
So basically your role is to set up the conversation for the shop, at which point you're out. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yeah. And the reason for that, and like I mentioned earlier, is, you know, we were toying with the idea of being an outsourced sales team that's calling and doing all these other things. And there are companies that do that. The problem is the amount, and Joe talked about this, I think, and did it great justice, is basically the amount of learning that you have to do to sell a complex agency service and to sort of internalize that history is a lot, you know. for the and in order to and you can have a lot of control over lead generation when you're doing it on this automated basis. So because everyone's living in their inboxes for 6 hours a day, and generally prefer to be contacted like that first, you can get really far in terms of generating leads. But once you introduce the phone, there's this whole other level of complexity. Not just for and risk, you know, and it's not just on our shoulders. It's also on the clients, you know, because we've got to be able to represent people the right way. And once you have a human to human on a line, that all changes. And that's one of the biggest, you know, pieces of negative feedback we get about clients' previous experience with companies kind of like ours is that, hey, yeah, they were calling our prospects and, you know, people are going to have questions they're not going to be able to answer. And it just sort of, you get somebody that's a good lead and then it becomes a bad lead because you're getting somebody on the phone with them that can't really describe the agency well enough and can't really sell for you. So, you know, that's the problem we're solving is basically getting that first degree of interest.
Now, I think what you just described in terms of people calling on behalf of a company is so on point because there's nothing worse than somebody hurting your brand while they're trying to extend it.
Right, right, exactly. And, you know, contrary to an email that somebody unsubscribes with, if you have a call with somebody, you're just going to be more likely to remember it more if it goes wrong, you know? So that's something that we take pretty seriously, yeah.
Okay, so $1 million question. Cold calling, is it ever a solution?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Yeah. Just because, you know, just because we rely on email to get that first degree of interest doesn't mean that the phone shouldn't be the quickest next step. So I think cold calling is great. I just am a big fan of starting with a list that is at least lukewarm, you know, that shows you some indicator that it's worth your time to pick up the phone and call them as opposed to just like the phone book, basically, you know, like here's a list of video game companies, size 11 to 50. Let me just call and get a bunch of gatekeepers. And like, you might as well whittle it down to one degree, you know, or one layer rather, and go from there. So, and the other thing is like, there's certain industries that we don't really touch, because we found them to be very hard to reach on the phone. So you know, if you're like a restaurant, or not a restaurant group, but like you're going after restaurants specifically, then that's going to be, and you're dealing with an owner that's running back and forth between a kitchen and the front door, they're going to be pretty tough to reach over email. You know, you're going to have to go door to door or get somebody that cold calls to reach those groups. So, you know, there's certain other examples of that, but yeah.
I might catch hell for this with the people listening. I know both of them. And the thing that gets me is we cold called at Engine when we first started. Now, the thing was, I was the one doing it, right? I couldn't design. I couldn't code. So I would call companies that I liked their product but thought their web stuff sucked. And I would get the highest person on the phone I could, and I would be like, for example, Bubba Burgers was one of them, right? And Bubba Burgers is a Jacksonville chain. And I just called them and I said, hey, Bubba Burgers are amazing. Your website is horrible. And you understand Bubba Burgers and we understand websites. So please just let us help you. And sure enough, 3 weeks later, they called back. They were supposed to have a sponsorship in football with Kingsford Charcoal. And Kingsford pulled out because their web property was so bad. And it paid off. And then Firehouse Subs. These are all Jacksonville chains, but Firehouse Subs called them, said, I don't know what the hell's going on with that flashing little animation of a fire truck going across the screen. I'm trying to find out about the food, which is amazing. Why are you getting in my way? And the director of marketing basically said, don't do that. And then a year later, we ended up on an RFP for them.
Right. There's so many.
And when I went back and looked, she said, well, you cared. You didn't just call and say, hire us. You called and said we were doing it wrong. Which of course impacted, you know, everything about my psyche. So thank you. So that's the thing. It's interesting, and I know it's not something that you do, but I think we turn away from it when what we should do is focus on it, but more as some if we're calling people that we understand what they do.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is if you're contacting the right people and it's companies that you could help and you have a lot of experience in that field, you're kind of doing them a disservice by not getting in touch with them, you know, and not letting them know that you exist. But you know, in terms of some chicken soup for the agency owner soul sort of thing, like everybody has resistance to cold calling. It's not fun. There's very few people to get energy from it. The difference is knowing that, you know, you whether it's cold calling or doing outbound or keeping your pipeline full, knowing that this is on you and this is something you need to be doing, I think is important. And it's, you know, I think that there is a big mindset problem with agency owners where they didn't get into this to be salespeople, but they're, you know, most of them are going to have to be. And if they're not, if they are going to hire out salespeople, that's fine, but it can take a while to, you know, be able to afford good people and to be able to get people on that are coachable and that can be ramped up and sell what you're doing over time. So I think that if you're not doing it, you know, you need to be thinking about that and planning for that and so on.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for being on the show today. I have to say I learned a few things, and I hate to acknowledge that I don't know everything. But there are a few things that you mentioned that I'm like, you know, that kind of makes sense for the Bureau if we could position it correctly. And our whole mission is just to build community, and we do that by finding people. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. It's great.
And for everybody listening, we'll be back soon, and we hope you'll tune in then. Have a great one.